Hello and welcome back to the Dive and Dig podcast. This week I'm returning to Egypt. Now, some of you may have been aware that a couple of years ago the British Museum hosted a spectacular exhibition which highlighted the site of Tonis Heraclion, a submerged settlement located to the east of Alexandria on the Mediterranean coast of Egypt. Well, today I'm going to be interviewing Dr. Mohammed Abdul Majid from the Department of Underwater Antiquities, the Supreme Council of Antiquities, and from the Ministry of Tourism and Antiquities. There's lots of people to thank here, about a very exciting new discovery that has been found on the other side of Abu Qir Bay, which is where Tonis Heraclion is located, to the west of the spectacular finds discovered by Frank Gaudio and his team. And you will be amazed with what we're about to hear. The only downside is that the developers, or as Mohammed calls them, the promoters, are on the heels of the Department of Underwater Antiquities. So the clock is ticking and they only have a limited amount of time. So listen to this spectacular, amazing, the discoveries from Abu Qir Bay, Dr. Mohammed Abdul Majid. Good morning, Mohammed. I'm absolutely delighted to invite you to the Dive and Dig podcast. I reckon you and your team with the Department of Underwater Antiquities in Alexandria in Egypt, and part of the Supreme Council of Antiquities, are probably working on the most exciting site that is extant in the world today, I would say. The site of Abu Qir. Now, maybe you could tell us a little bit about exactly where Abu Qir is in relation to, well, in Egypt.
So Abu Qir is about 30 kilometers to the east of Alexandria. Mainly, Abu Qir has a headland that separates between the sandy side of the north coast of Egypt and the muddy side of the north coast of Egypt. So this is the most western part of the delta of Egypt. On the eastern side we have the Bay of Abu Qir, where the two cities of Heraclion and West Canopus are located in the waters now. And from the western side, we found the new site that we called West of Abu Qir.
Western Abu Qir, okay. So how did you discover this site?
Yeah, this site was discovered there is 2 years. In fact, this area was a military area, so it was a prohibited area for the people for at least 70 years, from the 50s, I think. It was known before by Prince Omar Tosun and Brescia and the directors of the Greco-Roman Museum, because Omar Tosun had a villa there and he was active there also.
So Omar Tosun, is that, if I'm pronouncing that, most of our listeners won't necessarily know who he was. So
Omar Tosun was one of the royal family of Egypt before the revolution of 52. He was the director of the Archaeological Society of Alexandria, this society that founded the Greco-Roman Museum. So this man, Omar Tosun, sent his divers there, and they discovered started the discovery of the Abu Qir Bay with the east of Canopus, and also he managed to locate somehow the Nile branch underwater. So he is in the field from long time, and because he has all this big piece of land, he used to invite his friends in the society to dig there and to document what they can see there.
Wow, that's an amazing piece of sort of social history behind the site. I had no idea about that.
It was forgotten for about 70 years until they started to the Navy and the Army decided to leave the area for the promoters. The area will have a yacht harbor. Also, they are widening the Aboukir harbor. So for all of this, we had to go there.
Okay, so the site was discovered all these years ago, and you say that it was a military zone. So presumably, did that protect the area? I mean, now this development is starting, but presumably that period between, you know, being the palace, I guess, and now with the military, and now the development's happening. So presumably that meant that the site was quite well protected, I presume, for those 50-odd years.
Yes, somehow it was protected. Most of the area were protected, but the area where they need to construct something, they were constructing this building or so. But because the area was very big, so, and normally their installation are not really deep, it was somehow preserved.
Yeah. So, okay, you say the area is big and the remains are not very deep. So what sort of depth and what sort of area roughly are you working in?
So because we are talking about a site that is partly underwater and the main site is inland. So we have inland, we have some hills, we have also two citadels. Yeah, from the time of Ismail, Khedive Ismail, and at the same time of the British expedition on Egypt. Also, we have another one from 1900. And then going to the shore, and that's what happened, in fact, because our colleagues of the Alexandria Archaeological Department, and they came first on the site. They made their beginning introduction to the site itself, and then they found that there is some remains on the coast. So they called us, and then we went there. It is extending about maximum 70 meters in the water, with a depth of 2 meters, 2 meters and a half, not more than that.
Tricky working in those shallow depths, actually, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
So what is it? What's the main feature that you've been working on?
We are, let's say, we are in the waterfront of a city. Then we have inland, we have a lot of tombs, we have baths, we have temples, but on the shore we have, from where we recovered the statues, in fact we had what can be a temple. We didn't finish the work on it now, but we have in this area, especially, we have statues, part of statues, and I think what we are working now on is very big statues or part of very big statues that could be about 20 meters high.
20 meters high?
Yeah.
What period are these statues in the temple?
Yeah, from what we left out, this should be late period, the Pharaonic late period, or the Ptolemaic period.
Okay, so we're looking, I mean, correct me if I get my dates wrong. So you're sort of the sort of first millennium BC.
Let's say 7th BC to 30 BC.
Okay, all right. That's quite precise. I guess the Ptolemaic period is. Okay, so you've got these 20 metres. And what are the statues representing? People, I presume, or what are they? Gods, goddesses?
I think it should be one of the king. We had already recovered part of a statue, or let's say a headless statue. Also, it is broken from the knee. It makes about 2.20 meters from granite. Is about 3 tons. For the people who saw the other closer statue who came from Heraklion, and they were in exhibit in Europe for a long time, and now they are exhibited in the Grand Egyptian Museum. They are the same size, the same features, the same type of sculpture, and also they don't have names or inscription on them.
So basically then, is the assumption that the site that you're working on is an extension of Tonis Heraklion? It sounds, if the material is of a similar date, or it's a sister city, or do you have any sense of how these two sites are connected?
This is not the same city, but it is the group of the city in this area. This could be an extension of Canopus itself. Or maybe the scholars located that have located Taposius Parva, they were locating it wrongly in Mandara, and it should be in this area. Taposius Parva is one of the cities between Alexandria and Canopus that was mentioned by Strabo. So this could be Taposius Parva, because in Mandara we didn't find remains enough for a city. So, but here we have a big area where you can locate different aspects of life of this period. Taposius Parva is also is known from the Greek and Roman period.
I mean, it's just quite incredible, really, how, you know, obviously everybody connects Egypt with this amazing history and the archaeology and the pharaohs, and yet, you know, there's these huge cities that are just still revealing themselves. You know, it just keeps giving in a way, doesn't it, Egypt and the archaeology? It's quite incredible. But I also would love to understand a bit about that moment of discovery. When you find these incredible statues on the seabed, you know, are they buried? What do you see? Could you describe that feeling, that point of discovery?
In this specific area, we can see a square building. You can see two part of a square building with granite blocks. We have 3 stories, I think. Yes, 3. And in the middle, we have blocks of granite, unshaped at the beginning. It was for us unshaped blocks of granite, because they were not these cubic shapes of the remain of the building. But finally, when we went there and we start cleaning them, and also sucking the sand from around, we start to see that we have indication of statues. So, for example, one of them has the strips of the feminine cloth.
Ah, okay, yeah.
Okay, and another one has on the block, it has what seems like a hand grabbing something, and this hand is about is about 40 centimeters.
So you can imagine.
I'm just looking at my own hand now, thinking, wow, that's the difference.
Yes, and then we started to realize that no, this could be a part of statues, of colossal statues. And then
what we can see that it is not, it doesn't have shapes. No, it has shapes, but because it is very big, we couldn't imagine them at the beginning. What we need now, in fact, is to reverse them in order to see the other parts, and also to continue working on the photogrammetry, which is not easy at all because partly it is underwater and partly it is out of the water, and try to mount them on the computer before doing anything else. But here we are in an area where they are working now, the promoters. They were pushing sand, and at the same time, during the winter, the waves is taking the sediments and taking it in the area itself. So it needs a lot of work in order to clean it completely, and to see if we have other remains under the sand also. We have at least now we know that we have at least 2 to 3 meters of sand in this area, which is just 10 meters from the shore.
Yeah, so that's quite complicated, isn't it? I mean, you've got a number of challenges. The mobile sand. I mean, doing photogrammetry in those depths is very difficult because of the movement of the water and the light refraction. And yeah, so there's quite a number of challenges.
Because we know all of this, we had to start with a survey. So we made a visual survey. And thanks to Honor Frost Foundation, we had the money for a geophysical survey, which we didn't have the results yet, but I think soon, yes. With the visual survey, we could locate a jetty, a quay for ships, yeah. And we are working on it for the moment. It is about 1.50 meters underwater. Unfortunately, it was 125 meters, but now we have only 75 meters of it, and the remains was covered by a perpendicular mole that was created by the promoters, because there is a bridge who will pass by this area. We are concentrating on this site also because we want to understand how it was built. So it means also that this area was used as harbor, or as a port. We have also, just beside what we call the temple site, we have a very huge and elegant fish tank, very big, Roman one. And this will be studied after we finish the booth sites where we are working now. We have also a fourth site, which is a shipwreck.
Ah, okay.
We found on the shipwreck a Byzantine coin.
Right.
We found a part of a balance, the bronze bulb of a balance. And it was carrying, at least that's what we found in it, nuts and almonds.
Oh, how fascinating.
So this one will be one of the latest sites to study. Yeah, it's not easy, the condition. That's why we were working in the summer. We are working in the winter, which we wait for the good days of diving or of the sea in order to continue. If you cannot work on one side, you can work on the other side. If you cannot do hydrolift, you can do photogrammetry and so on. We are trying to do our best. We have 8 divers. They are not here all the time, but we can between 4 and 8, and this is the way we can do until now in order to grab the most of the information that we can have.
So what are you going to do with the objects that you have lifted?
So we have left four big objects, if we can say, and also some small objects like the stamped handle for amphoras, coins. There is a lot of coins and vases and so on. These are now in the laboratory for the desalination and the conservation, and then it will go to the our storeroom. You saw it before, and yes, and from there we are providing all the museums with objects. We continue the for the museum their scenario, especially the new museum, or to have a group the whole collection in one hall, like what happened in the Grand Egyptian Museum. The Grand Egyptian Museum, they took from us the a lot of artifacts from Heraklion, so they have a hall for Heraklion.
A whole hall. Oh wow! Okay.
This is the two ways of exhibiting our objects, the recovered objects, and the third one is to have temporary exhibits, like what is happening now in the National Museum of Alexandria, or like what happened before in France, England, Germany, United States, and so on.
So this is the material from Tonis Heraklion that went on tour, in effect, didn't it? So it was sort of exhibited in national museums around the world, which was pretty amazing. I remember seeing that exhibit in the British Museum, which was fairly stunning, to say the least. Wow. Yes. An absolutely amazing site, but obviously a huge challenge as well, with all of these different factors, the sediments, the lack of funding, the lack of people, the encroaching developers, the waves of the winds, the shallow waters. I mean, it's just like it's on one hand, it's the most incredible site. On the other hand, I imagine you don't sleep a lot at night trying to work out how best to tackle this and how to prioritise as well when you've got such amazing finds. I think this is probably the first of a number of podcasts around Aboukir, if that's all right. If we can revisit how you're getting on in a couple of months' time, maybe, to see what new discoveries. But I really, really appreciate your time, because I know you probably should be in the water at this point rather than sitting in your house talking to me. So thank you, Mohammed. And I just wish you the best of luck, because it's just such an incredible site.
And thank you very much, Lucy, and thank you for having me in this podcast.
Whoa, that was amazing. I am so jealous. No, I'm not to talk, just a little bit. Oh yes, 20 meter high statues, submerged keys, shipwrecks. How amazing. Thank you, Mohammed, for sharing this incredible site with us, and I truly will be revisiting this. I just hope that you can keep the developers off your heels for long enough to preserve and record as much of the site as possible. So thank you to Mohammed, and thank you to you for listening to this Dive and Dig podcast, brought to you by the Honor Frost Foundation, a charity that researches into and preserves maritime archaeology of the Eastern Mediterranean. Hope you tune in next time. Bye.